As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to this Canadians live room. I'm just going to give a little bit of time for people to enter the room, if they do. I'm just in Minneapolis right now for 3 days, as the Canadians have a day off today in Minneapolis, and they will practice on Wednesday in Minneapolis and then finally play on Thursday. So I guess I'll just share a few thoughts as we wait for listeners to come in, as they're slowly starting to trickle in now. The game in Winnipeg last night, was sort of a really interesting kind of test for the Canadians, because they didn't play their best game. You know, I mean, I thought the game before against the Islanders, the first two periods of that game, that was kind of the best version of the Canadians. And that's not really what we saw against the Jets, but they played well enough to stay in it, to take a lead, and sort of withstand the inevitable push that was going to come from a Jets team that was really crazy hot. You know, I mean, they're two previous games were a 6-2 win against Colorado and a 5-2 win against LA. So this is a team that was trending in the right direction. The Canadians did sort of weather that storm. Again, not their best performance, but definitely good enough to earn a win, and good enough at the right moments of the game, I feel like, especially after the Jets tied it just past the midway point of the third period. I thought the way the Canadians responded to that, to me, was kind of the most significant part of that game. You know, in previous weeks and at times this season, that would have led to a snowball effect where the momentum was too great and they kind of wilted, whereas the Canadians didn't do that, you know, on the road against a really difficult opponent. So, you know, for a young team trying to find its way, trying to find an identity, I thought that was pretty important. I know we keep hammering on sort of the improved forecheck the Canadians have been employing, but when we talk about an identity, you know, that is something that they can really hang their hat on sort of going forward. And Martin Saint-Louis has, you know, had trouble finding lines anywhere up and down the lineup all season. You know, aside from the fact that Juraj Slafkovský is playing with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield and doing so quite well, you know, the Sean Monahan, Josh Anderson, and particularly Jake Evans line, I feel has really become sort of an anchor line, and not in a negative way, but just sort of like a foundational line, I guess, for the way the Canadiens play. I mean, Martin Saint-Louis started them in each of the three periods in Winnipeg. That's not an accident. After the game, Marty said that, you know, it gives him a right-handed and a left-handed option in the faceoff circle, which is true. But when the faceoff's at center ice, it's a bit less important than the way that line plays. And what they did on that first shift of every period was get the puck into the jet zone and then play with the puck in the jet zone. And obviously, Josh Anderson got another goal, set up the second goal. So, you know, maybe he's going to go on a run right now, but that looks like a really solid line. And then the Dvorak-Gallagher-Armia line was fine, I guess, but it's not really it's not hurting them. It's not perfect, obviously, but I mean, I think as far as third lines go, it's sufficient. And then the fourth line obviously sat for most of the third period because it was a tight game on the road, and Marty hasn't shown any significant amount of trust, and frankly, you can't really blame him when you're talking about Mitchell Stevens, Michael Pezzetta, and Jesse Ullinen, who I think can show good things at times, but are not very high in the trust scale when it comes to Marty and how he sort of doles out assignments. So just a reminder that if anyone listening wants to ask a question, you can go on what's called the stage. And I could take questions there. If not, you could just write something in the chat and I can answer those questions as well. I'll probably go for about 45 minutes here, so don't be shy. There's a few questions in the chat. I could start with that. What is the Slav comparison now, Christopher? Don't quite know what you mean. Now as opposed to when. I mean, I don't know if the comparison has necessarily changed, and I don't really like really comparing players too much. I think Slavkovsky is a pretty unique player. That combination of size, skill, and speed is rare. That's why the Canadiens drafted him, because players like that are not available in the draft all the time. I was wondering if you know, they might go that way again, but I know that the thing that put Slav over the top, there were two things. There was, you know, obviously his performance on big stages at the Olympics, at the World Championships. But other than that, just a unique combination that you can't draft, and it's difficult to acquire. And, you know, I mean, for the record, I think that was kind of the same calculation they made with David Reinbacher in the last draft. Was, you know, a lot of people were comparing Reinbacher to Moritz Seider. And I had someone with the Canadiens say that, you know what, this was at the draft. You know what, we kind of see him more like a Noah Dobson. And trading for Noah Dobson is practically impossible. And you look at what Noah Dobson is doing this season. If Reinbacher turns out anything like Noah Dobson, I think they'll be elated. But that obviously remains to be seen, and this is not about Noah Dobson. So Slav's comparison, I mean, listen, pre-draft, a lot of people said, listen, at his highest ceiling, he could turn out like a Rick Nash, but I don't know about that. The more I watch him, Rick Nash's hands were kind of on another level, and Slavkovsky's still learning how to use his, and he's trying to absorb so much, but I think his playmaking ability is really what's going to set him apart as a bigger player. Yes, he's going to learn to drive the net with more authority as he gets older. He's already showing greater proficiency in board battles, protecting the puck, absorbing contact, hanging on to the puck longer. But it's his ability to make plays for his teammates out of those situations that I feel really makes him unique. And it kind of reminds me somewhat of someone like Ryan Getzlaf, honestly. So again, not saying he's going to turn into a Ryan Getzlaf. First of all, he's not a center. But I think if everything goes well and continues playing like this, that's the type of player I could see him maybe becoming again, if there's a smooth path. So thanks for the question, Christopher. We have someone on stage. I'll just get one more from Michael here, because I think this is appropriate. Should we be worried that the Canadiens goalies are keeping them in the mushy middle? For the record, I am extremely worried. LOL. Thanks for your concern, Michael. Yeah, it's definitely a thing. And this is the one thing where, you know, you talk to the Canadians, you talk to Marte St. Louis, and they're not willing, they're not going to be willing to not give themselves the best chance to win every game as long as they are in the orbit or the galaxy of playoff hopeful teams. And Michael, you're 100% right. The only reason the Canadians are in that galaxy is because of their goaltending, whether it's Caden Primo, Sam Montembeau, or Jake Allen. Even though Allen hasn't been winning many games, aside from games against the Winnipeg Jets, they are keeping the Canadians in games that maybe they don't belong in, and allowing them to remain competitive. Does that put them in the mushy middle? I don't think so. Listen, I've said from the start of the season, I didn't think this team was going to draft in the top five. I still think they're going to draft in the top 10 when all is said and done, unless they prove me wrong. And if they do, power to them. But I don't see this team sustaining any kind of competitiveness, especially when the quality of hockey sort of ramps up in the new year, into January, into February, as teams start to sort of gear up and load up for the final stretch towards the playoffs. I feel like the Canadians might get a little left behind at that point in the season, but, you know, power to them for playing well. But the mushy middle to me is drafting from 12 to 15. You know, I mean, that's really, you know, being in the playoff hunt and just missing out. So yes, the goaltending is probably going to worsen the Canadiens draft pick, but I do think that the goaltending will also allow the Canadiens to gain a little bit of experience playing in games where at least they feel some pressure to win. You know, I don't think that pressure is going to come from the outside. No one's ever going to have any expectation that the Canadiens are going to win, unless they go on a run here. I mean, that again, if they prove me wrong on that again, power to them. But, you know, I was talking to Jake Evans after the game in Winnipeg, and he said, you know, our goal is to play meaningful games in February and March. That's our goal. It's not an unattainable goal. I mean, he's not saying our goal is to make the playoffs, and he's not saying our goal is to win the Stanley Cup. He's saying our goal is to play games that have meanings in the standings for us come February and March, which is a long way away. So they would need to sustain a certain level of competitiveness, a certain level of play in order for that to become a reality. But the way they're playing now over the last few games, you know, definitely for the first and third period against Pittsburgh, definitely for the first two periods against the Islanders, and really for the second period against the Jets, they could do that, but they just need to find a way to be more consistent about it and make it a 60-minute thing, and not just little spurts of games.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Here, I'll take this question from Thierry, who's on stage. So let's go to him. Hey, Thierry.
Oui, bonjour. Arpin?
Oui, oui, salut.
Oui, question oui, en français.
Oui, vas-y.
Si ça te va.
Oui, oui, vas-y.
Oui, je vais parler de Jaden ouais. Struble.
Est-ce que tu...
Oui.
Okay. Vas-y, je t'écoute.
Y a-t-il un problème? Okay.
Non, non, c'est un peu... Il okay. Il y a un petit écho, mais c'est pas grave.
OK. Il n'était pas nécessairement vu comme un prospect, là... Il allait avoir un grand avenir avec le Canadien, mais là, la façon qu'il joue actuellement, ça semble vraiment bien se passer. Est-ce que pour toi, son plafond a changé suite à son rappel?
Oui, Thierry, je vais te mettre en mute parce que ça juste ça me bug dans mon oreille. Mais merci, c'est une bonne question. Est-ce que son plafond a changé? Oui, je pense que oui. Écoute, depuis ces 4 années à l'université, je pense que il y avait plusieurs personnes dans l'organisation du Canadien qui se demandaient qu'est-ce que ça va donner, ce gars-là, au niveau professionnel, en sautant un niveau, un saut qui est quand même assez, assez significatif. Mais lui a fait, Struble a fait tout dans son possible que ça fonctionne. Tu sais, il a passé du temps à Brassard, s'entraîner, il est allé à Laval l'année passée pour quelques matchs. Mais le plus qu'il joue au niveau professionnel, le plus que ça devient un peu évident que son style de jeu, la manière qui se comporte sur la glace, est un peu plus approprié au niveau professionnel que ça l'était dans la NCAA. Alors, est-ce que son plafond est en train de changer? Oui, peut-être. Est-ce que ça change énormément? Est-ce qu'il y a un plafond qui est extrêmement haut? Je crois pas encore, mais je dois avouer que dans les minutes qu'on le voit, il est super efficace, il se comporte pas du tout comme un recrue, puis sa première passe, et on n'a même pas vu encore vraiment l'aspect vraiment physique est un peu nasty de son jeu. C'est ce qui était un peu sa marque de commerce. C'est un peu pour ça que Marc Bergevin l'aimait tant pour le repêcher en deuxième ronde, et c'était un peu sa qualité première que le Canadien voyait en lui. Ça prend du temps pour apprendre comment jouer ce style-là au niveau de la Ligue nationale. Je pense qu'on le voit avec Arber Jacquet en ce moment, qui a été envoyé à Laval pour un peu peaufiner sa prise de décision et la façon dont il exerce ce style-là au niveau professionnel. Alors, Struble, le fait qu'il est patient avec, il est pas en train de courir partout pour chercher à frapper qui que ce soit, ça montre une certaine maturité dans son jeu, mais je suis pas prêt à dire que son plafond est énormément haut, mais c'est définitivement plus haut que ça l'était quand le Canadien l'a signé, effectivement, à la fin de son université. Pardon, je vais être unmuté. OK, Thierry, je pense que je suis pas capable de t'enlever du mute, alors merci pour ta question. Thanks for the question, Thierry. For those who didn't understand, Thierry was just asking if James Struble's ceiling is considerably higher than maybe when the Canadiens drafted him or even when they signed him at the end of last season. And I was just kind of saying how I'm not willing to say it's that much higher, but it definitely is a little bit higher just because of the maturity in his game, his decision making, and the way his game really appears to be, and he actually agreed with this when I asked him about it, it just appears to be better suited to a pro-style game than it was the NCAA style of game. So, I think I'm trying to think of a game where Jaden Struble stood out for the wrong reasons, and I can't think of one. It's really been a sensible approach to the start of his NHL career, and not getting overwhelmed by everything, but really staying composed, showing good poise, all the kind of qualities. And when Martin Saint-Louis says that his touches are much better than he thought they would be, you can't really get a much better compliment from Martin Saint-Louis than that. And that's what Jaden Struble got very early on. So good for him. And it does further complicate the picture on defense. You know, I mean, listen, I don't think Mike Matheson, even though I've seen a name on a couple of trade boards, I don't think he's really going anywhere anytime soon. Caden Gooley, obviously, is not going anywhere anytime soon. So that leaves kind of one left D spot. You got Jordan Harris, who's on IR. He's traveling with the Canadiens right now. You got Arber Jacquet, obviously. You've got Jaden Struble now. Adam Engstrom is probably coming over next season from Sweden. He's again having an excellent season in the SHL. Could be an interesting option there. Matthias Norlanders, who back in training camp, I think a lot of people thought, man, this guy might make this team. So it's a lot of left shot D that are kind of fighting for what looks to be one spot for the time being. So good for Jaden Struble to actually play himself into that mix. And I think there's going to be really interesting to see that play out. Okay, I see there's someone else on stage. I'm just going to get to a couple more. There's one from Home. It's a good handle, Home. I thought Laval was to be better this season. What happened? I don't know why you thought Laval was going to be better, because the coach and the organization, everyone said it was going to be difficult. They have a very young team in Laval. They've been impacted, obviously, by some call-ups and injuries and what have you. And the goaltending has just been atrocious, which, again, was to be expected, especially with Caden Primo sort of in waiver prison in Montreal. J.F. Hull, as early as rookie camp, as early as development camp in July, said, you know, up until Christmas, it's going to be really tough. And he's proven prophetic. You know, it's exactly what's happening. So, but now, and even then, I went to see Arbor Jacki's first game, and I asked him, and I said that exact thing. You said it was going to be tough, and so it is. So does that make it easier to deal with? He's like, no, I said it would be tough, but I thought we'd be further along at this point than we are. And I said it would be tough, and it is. It's tough. And so it's just because they knew it was going to be difficult doesn't make it any easier to go out and lose games by kind of big scores. But it's really due to a lot of the inconsistencies in their younger players. You know, Joshua Roy was lighting the AHL on fire at the beginning of the season. Then he went into a lull, and he produced a bit more. They went into a lull, and this is a very normal thing. So, and he's just one example of many. You know, William Trudeau had an amazing training camp. Didn't earn the call-up. When Jaden Struble got called up, if you'd have asked me who would be the first sort of left shot D to get called up from Laval, I would have guessed Matthias Norlander or William Trudeau. It was Jaden Struble. Here, let's go back to stage. We got François G. François?
Oui, oui, bonjour, Arpen. François Guy.
Salut.
Écoute, je voulais savoir si tu penses que le Canadien va finir par échanger des défenseurs, parce que malheureusement, là, tu en faisais référence tout à l'heure, là, on manque beaucoup de profondeur à l'attaque. On n'est pas capable d'avoir une quatrième ligne digne de la Ligue nationale. Il me semble que le GM devrait faire un effort pour aller chercher du talent à l'attaque.
Oui, je suis pas en désaccord avec toi. C'est vrai que c'est un peu ça la beauté de la chose. T'sais, le Canadien, clairement, leur développement et leur processus pour se rendre à la prochaine étape de bâtir une équipe compétitive, ça va passer par la défensive. Gouli est là déjà. Ils ont utilisé un autre haut choix au repêchage sur Ryan Backer. Il y a plein d'espoir qui peuvent avoir des belles carrières dans la Ligue nationale. J'ai même pas mentionné Logan Mailloux du côté droit. Il y en a beaucoup. Alors, puis il y a le Konyushkov, si je me trompe pas, mais le gars en Russie qui ont repêché en cinquième ronde, qui est en train de vraiment épater le KHL en ce moment. Alors, il y a beaucoup de valeur dans les espoirs. Alors, oui, à un moment donné, je suis convaincu que Ken Hughes et Jeff Gorton vont utiliser cette richesse-là, cette profondeur-là, pour aller chercher un peu plus de profondeur à l'attaque. Mais à mes yeux, c'est pas nécessairement le temps de le faire maintenant. Parce que la plupart de ces joueurs-là sont pas développés, puis ils ont pas démontré leur valeur aux autres équipes de la Ligue à un niveau qui les tenterait d'envoyer quelque chose d'une valeur égale à l'attaque. Chaque équipe voit leurs espoirs comme étant meilleurs que les espoirs des autres équipes. C'est juste naturel. Ils ont repêché ce joueur-là. Ils l'ont vu développer, le connaît. Alors, quand il y a un défenseur qui n'a pas fait ses preuves dans la Ligue nationale d'une autre organisation, puis oui, tu peux regarder puis dire, waouh, c'est vraiment beau. Puis il y a des dépisteurs à chaque match du Rocket. Mais avant que ce joueur-là est capable de démontrer au niveau de la Ligue nationale sur une base constante, particulièrement quand on parle de la gamme de joueurs que l'on parle, sont des beaux espoirs, mais sont pas des no-doubters, sont pas des hauts choix au repêchage, sont pas des gars que tout le monde voulait l'année où il était disponible au repêchage. C'est même Struble était un choix de deuxième ronde, ce qui est un autre choix. Harris, si je ne me trompe pas, c'était troisième ronde. Engstrom, si je ne me trompe pas, c'est troisième ronde. C'est des gars qui ont beaucoup de potentiel, mais ils n'ont pas ce cachet-là d'être un hot prospect au niveau, au moment du draft. Et c'est souvent ces joueurs-là qui vont aller te chercher quelque chose parce qu'il y avait une équipe qui voulait vraiment avoir ce gars-là en première ronde, puis a été choisi deux, trois sélections avant. Alors, moi, je pense que la patience serait la meilleure façon de faire et laisser ces gars-là développer pour voir non seulement quel joueur, non seulement les permettre d'avoir une meilleure valeur sur le marché des échanges, mais aussi pour savoir lequel de ces joueurs-là le Canadien veut intégrer dans leur noyau. Mm-hmm. Alors, je trouve que, écoute, il n'y a pas de rush. Comme je disais tantôt, c'est bien beau que le Canadien veut jouer des matchs significatifs en février et mars, mais je pense que le management de l'équipe puis la plupart des partisans voient cette équipe-là et disent ils sont à 2-3 ans avant que ça va être important avec eux. Alors, je pense qu'il y a du temps, puis ce serait mieux de laisser un peu ces joueurs-là développer un peu.
OK. Bonne réponse. Merci.
OK. Merci, François. J'apprécie l'appel. So, thank you, François. Just for those who might not have understood, this was him asking if the Canadians should trade use some of their depth of prospects on defense to shore up their depth up front. And I just said, yeah, I don't disagree, but I think the time isn't quite right now. It would be better to let these defensemen sort of develop and not only build up their trade value, but also demonstrate to the Canadians that they could be part of the solution in Montreal. And once they've demonstrated a certain ability to play at the NHL level, that's when you'll get probably the best return in the trade. So thank you. Merci pour la question, François. Okay, let's go back to the chat. It's great that our defense leads the league in scoring goals. Is that a product of the way MSL wants the team to play? A little bit, I would say. That's a question from Paul. Thank you. It is somewhat. I mean, I don't know if you caught my piece on Monday, the weekly kind of notebook piece, where Jonathan Kovacevic was talking about the game plan they had against Pittsburgh, where if a forward was bringing the puck up the wall in the offensive zone, sometimes the defenseman will dive down to sort of switch places with that forward. In this case, it was Nick Suzuki coming up the wall with the puck. Kovacevic dove down, but against the Penguins, because of the way they play in the defensive zone, he wanted Kovacevic to stay in the high ice, get open for a one-timer, which he could have, because Nick Suzuki was to his right, and he's a righty shot. So it was sort of a missed opportunity. But what that did was provide a bit of a window of the extent to which the defensemen are part of the offensive zone game plan. And so I think there are several instances during a game, and if you're watching the game, it'd be worthwhile to just keep an eye on the defensemen while the Canadians are in the offensive zone. It's interesting to watch their movements, how they read off the puck, the decisions they make as to when to dive down, when not to, when to cut back door. They're in constant movement, and it really is an attack that is predicated on five players. It's not forwards do this, defense do this. It is to some extent, but I mean, it really is a case of situational hockey and positionless hockey, where everyone is making reads based on where they are in relation to the puck, where the puck is going, who has it, what handed shot they are, how the defense is playing. So, I mean, yes, I think the Canadians, like many teams, this is not unique to the Canadians, not unique to Martin Saint-Louis at all, but defensemen really do have free rein to dive back door, to take some risks. And the forwards are tasked with recognizing those situations and making sure that they are covering for those guys when they do those things. So Paul, I mean, I hope that answers your question. And I think, you know, I mean, honestly, the goal last night, Justin Barrett, I think that was his sixth goal. I believe I haven't checked, but I think he's pretty high up the scoring list among defensemen in the NHL. I can actually check it right now. But if I'm not mistaken, he's somewhere close to the top 10, which is pretty wild when you think about it, for Justin Barron. But it is, you know, that's not a demonstration of what I was just talking about. That was just a 4-on-3 power play. He took a shot from the middle of the ice and it went in, and that's going to happen. But generally, the way the Canadians ask their defensemen to play, yeah, sorry. But Justin Barron is tied for 10th in the NHL with Erik Karlsson and Jake Walman. Ahead of Noah Dobson, Victor Hedman, Josh Morrissey, Jacob Chychrun, Mike Matheson, Mo Sider. So good for him. But yeah, as a team, obviously, it is part of their strategy to sort of play as a five-man unit, not only on offense, but on defense as well. Thanks for the question, Paul. Yeah, just a reminder, if you guys want to jump on stage, feel free to do so. Tristan, ask this for the basket. Yes, I remember this question. Ask this for the basket. Good day notebook. But I'll ask here too. Is Chris Weidman dead? Is it injury shenanigans to avoid Laval? Any update on him? No, he's not dead. I've seen him. So you can be relieved of that. You know, he has a back injury. And believe it or not, but I mean, it doesn't sound to me like it's an injury that's gonna make him available to play anytime soon. I really don't think the Canadiens expect him to play this season. I admittedly have not seen him in a while. Like, he was around and was regularly on the bench during morning skates. So I will check on that, you know, because it has been a while since I've seen him. I will admit that. So Tristan, when I find out, I will put an update out there. Jeff, I think this is a good question. What do you think the Habs need to do to not end up like Buffalo or Ottawa? So here's the thing. I think the Canadiens' goal is to end up like Buffalo or Ottawa. Now, it's not going well this season, but I think that demonstrates how difficult it is to make that turn. Buffalo and Ottawa both went into a massive rebuild. They really cleared the decks and traded away some high-profile players. Some of those trades worked, like the Erik Karlsson trade for Ottawa, for instance. Some of them didn't, like the Mark Stone trade for Ottawa. Some of them worked for Buffalo. The Jack Eichel trade worked out pretty well. The Ryan O'Reilly trade worked out pretty well, even though Buffalo was incensed when Ryan O'Reilly led the Blues to the Stanley Cup. But, I mean, you know, they have Tage Thompson as a result. So, you know, both those franchises have done a lot of things right. I mean, Ottawa, what draft is it off the top of my head? But the year that Stützle was drafted was also the year that Sanderson was drafted, if I'm not mistaken. I want to make sure I'm right. I'm pretty sure I am. But, you know, they basically have the two top players from that draft. Like, that's striking gold. You know what I mean? That's just totally discovering gold. When, you know, they did have two top five picks that year, but it was not a given. And remember, Ottawa got very criticized for the Sanderson pick, like very criticized. It was not something that some people who know about the draft, you know, the fact that Sanderson went ahead of Jamie Drysdale, who everyone was gushing over with his hockey sense and just his dynamic offensive skill. Sanderson didn't appear to have that. Ottawa stuck to the guns. They took him. So you do get two top five picks, but for you to wind up with the third and fifth pick and have the two best players out of that draft, that's pretty remarkable. So to answer your question, I think the Canadiens would love it if they were positioned like Buffalo or Ottawa, but what they would avoid is this. And I think Detroit, even though I didn't agree with some of the stuff they did, you got to admit, watching them go, that them signing, periodically adding veterans, David Perron, JT Compher, Andrew Kopp, like these weird kind of signings when a team is rebuilding, well, those players have provided somewhat of a foundation or some insulation for their younger players to thrive and have created sort of an infrastructure for the Red Wings rebuild. You know, Buffalo did that this offseason by going and getting Erik Johnsson and Connor Clifton to shore up their young defense. Ottawa did it with Tarasenko, but Detroit has been doing that for a few years now. So maybe some sort of hybrid between those two is something. But I think the Canadian, I think those teams are where the Canadians would hope to be, not what's happening now in the standings. But you look at their systems, you look at their pipelines, and I refuse to believe that these two teams won't be competitive very soon. And really, I think in an ideal world, the Canadians would be in a similar situation from them. But now they can look at what Buffalo and Ottawa have done. And what sort of derailed their season this year and learn from it. And that's kind of the one advantage the Canadiens have of being sort of at the end of the rebuild line in their division, because Buffalo's been at it for a long time, Ottawa's been at it for a long time, Detroit's been at it for a long time, Montreal just started. So maybe they can draw some lessons, but I think overall, generally speaking, the Canadiens would be pretty thrilled to look somewhat like Buffalo or Ottawa in a few years' time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Thomas, I do not have any insight on what the Canadians like from 5 to 10. It's way too early for me to be in draft mode. It's, I apologize, but I do tend to start sort of digging into it sometime after the trade deadline. So I will get back to you on that. Matt B, is the mushy middle a little overstated when there will be a big run of D early this year and we need a forward? Yeah. And that's a good point. And this is actually, I think I could share this, but this is something I wanted to find out about the Reinbacher pick, is that because of the big run of D early in this draft, you know, the Canadians seemed quite, adamant that. And as I mentioned earlier, I asked someone, and the comp was Noah Dobson, and Noah Dobson's a player that you just can't acquire unless you draft him. And so I asked the same person, even a couple of people, I was just kind of canvassing around a little bit at the combine. I was like, when you look at this year's draft, like, would it not have been better to wait, get a defenseman in this year's draft? And they are convinced that the complete package that Reinbacher presents in their eyes was not available in this year's draft. There are many defensemen who have one, if not two, dimensions that are really nice, but they come with a weakness. That could be true or not true, but that's the perception that they had. And so they don't see that weakness in Reinbacher's game. So, but you could be correct, Matt, that the top, you know, maybe the third best forward in the draft could fall to Montreal, considering the way it's going to play out this year. It's a very reasonable possibility, depending on where they finish, obviously. So, yeah, thank you. Yes, Thierry is apologizing for the sound. He was in his car, and that's the thing, is that if you do jump on stage, guys, you can't use Bluetooth, you can't use a speaker, because then the feedback goes pretty bad for everyone. Okay, I got two questions on Jack Eye here, so let's sort of bottle them. David, injuries and performance will influence the answer, but any sense on the timing of a return for Jack Eye? And Steven asks, why is Jack Eye in Laval? Injury rehab, or does he not fit the MSL mold, taking too many penalties? So, So, to answer that, injury rehab, or does he not fit the MSL mold? There's a lot in between those two options, Steven. There's really not. So I don't think it's injury rehab per se. I do think that Jack Eye was sent to Laval with a certain mandate and certain instructions from the Canadians on an area of his game that he needs to address, which is, yes, those penalties that you mentioned. And just being, they want him to round out his defensive game. It was an issue before he got hurt. It was something he talked about openly. His rush defense was an issue. They talked to him about it. He was not gapping up properly. He was not gapping up well enough for a guy that has the feet that Jack Eye has at his size. And he was just giving players too much space in the defensive zone. So it's something he's aware of, but something he did not mention, to me at least, I'm sure he has by this point, but you know, it's pretty obvious that he was sent down to work on his discipline and to demonstrate an ability to play a hard game without getting himself in trouble, whether that's defensively because he's going out of his way to hit someone and he gets himself out of position, whether that's penalties, whether that's fights at inopportune times, what have you. It seems clear to me, and this is me talking, Jack, I didn't say this to me, no one said this to me, but it seems clear to me that this is another aspect of his game that the Canadians want to see him work on, is to prove that he can play the game. That stuff will always be there. And it's not something the Canadians want to get rid of for sure. Guaranteed, I can assure you that the physical, nasty element in Jack Eye's game is what makes him appealing to the Canadians. They don't want to lose that, but they need it to be properly dosed. They need it to appear organically at appropriate times and not be the sole element that Jack Eye brings to the game, because I think they see a lot of potential in him, a lot of talent. And as mentioned earlier, you know, it's a crowded picture on the blue line, but this administration, they look at Jack Eye and they see, you know, it gets old saying it all the time, but I think a lot of teams in the NHL look at the defense group that Vegas won the cup with and they're like, that's what we want. And Jack Eye is not quite that. Like, you know, they have, I guess he kind of fits the mold of like a Braden McNabb, but I mean, it's really, you know, the size, the physicality, the nastiness, like in playoff hockey, a guy like that is gold. And I think the Canadians recognize that, but you also can't have a guy taking bad penalties. You can't have a guy going out of position because he's running around trying to hit people in the playoffs. That costs you as well. So I think there's just a process that he needs to go through. Yeah, I'll take a couple more. And then I got to run. I got to finish writing something. But I think this one from Daniel. Do you think Ullinen will get a more significant opportunity higher in the lineup? He seems to be making the most of the time he's been afforded and PP2. Again, this is actually a very similar situation to Jack Eye, except that Ullinen has not been sent to Laval. Martin is insistent that there are elements of Ullinen's game away from the puck that need to be addressed both offensively and defensively. I talked to Ullinen about this, and he actually agreed. Again, this was in my notebook on Monday, but again, I don't expect what else is Ullinen really supposed to say? He's not going to admit to a reporter that he thinks his coach is wrong. But I asked him at that point, I was like, well, when you hear him say you need to work on your game away from the puck offensively, what does that mean to you? And he went into this really long, detailed explanation of what that means. And it means reading off your teammates better. It means knowing when to support, when to go into a battle to help, how to recognize space around the puck, and all. And he just went on and on about it. So he is at the very least aware of what's being asked of him. He appears to have embraced it, and appears to know that until that part of his game gets cleaned up, he's not going to get that opportunity further up the lineup. His hands are obvious. His shot is obvious, but there are things. And maybe, you know, in this sense, it fits with Jack Eye when I guess it was Steven who said, you know, not fit the MSL mold. Well, I think Martin's mold is pretty flexible. It's not rigid, but he always says that there are certain things that are non-negotiable with him, and they're kind of abstract, you know, but there are certain ways to play the game that he wants to implement. And needs everyone implementing them in order for it to work. And that's what we talked about after the game in Winnipeg. You know, they had five guys on the same page, all reading off each other, coming in waves to attack the puck. And he really liked that. And so if you're not on that same page, it's going to be difficult for him to play you in late game situations. So Ullinen's aware of it, seems okay with it. We'll see where it goes. Okay, last one for me, and then I'm going to let you guys go. Let's see, David. Do you think Evans is part of the Canadiens' future plans? He's a right shot, he's good on draws, and he can kill penalties, but he seems like a complete zero offensively. That said, the line of Anderson, Evans, Monahan has looked good for the last couple of weeks. Yeah, so, see, this is the thing, David, is that this is kind of the opposite end of the equation, right, when compared to Ylönen. Is Evans does all those things that Marty wants Ylönen to do, he does them. He has grown up knowing that he has to do those things. When he was in Laval, I remember I sat down with him in the dressing room once while he was in Laval, and he kind of admitted to me, he said, you know, if I'm going to make the NHL, it's probably going to be as a fourth line center. So I got to get really good at faceoffs. I got to learn how to kill penalties. I got to learn how to check. I got to be sound positionally. I got to do all these things away from the puck that Marty is asking Ylönen to do. Now, Ylönen has the pure offensive talent. What's interesting in Evans' case is that his ability to do those things, in Marty's eyes at least, and even in mine, make him a non-zero offensively. It's never going to be the strength of his game, offensively, I mean. He's not going to be an offensive forward. But Marty often mentions that, you know, that Evans has more offense in his game than he gets credit for. And I'm starting to kind of see it. And one area in which I see it of late, I was actually talking with my colleague, Patrick Elia of RDS, while we were waiting at the Winnipeg airport about this. But Jake's ability to carry the puck through the neutral zone is a real plus for him. And it really facilitates offense for his line mates and even for him. But that's a skill that's not as simple as just getting the puck and skating through the neutral zone. You have to pick lanes, you have to pick corridors, you have to read sort of the other team's forecheck and the other team's, if it's a trap, to read their trap and sort of make decisions on the fly. His skating has improved a great deal to the point where it's a relative strength of his, but it's his ability to see ice, see openings, see lanes, and get the puck through that sort of quagmire that often exists in the neutral zone and get it into the offensive zone so that the Canadiens can be playing offense. Now, once he does that, will he get assists? Will he get goals? Maybe not. But the fact that Canadiens are in the offensive zone is often based on what he did. And I think if you saw the game in Winnipeg and against the Islanders in particular, but really against Winnipeg, just because it's a precious one in my mind. I mean, I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you were all around, but like that line started every period, and that line began every period for the Canadiens playing in the offensive zone. Jake Evans is a big part of that. You know, his transition skill has improved a great deal. And so, yeah, we'll see what happens. But as far as being part of the Canadiens' future, like this is the other thing, is that we were talking about the defense earlier and people looking over their shoulders a little bit. Well, we're about to watch Owen Beck play in the World Junior Championships. And Owen Beck's eventually going to come after Jake Evans' job. Like, that's just the reality. So what he's doing right now, playing on a wing, kind of, being on a second line, showing that he can facilitate for guys that are naturally more offensive than he is, bodes well for him. Because if you go back to what he said as a Laval Rocket, that if I have a future in the NHL, it's probably as a fourth-line center. Well, Owen Beck is the fourth-line center for Team Canada right now. And Owen Beck is probably in those same shoes, but as a second round pick who had first round talent and who's been on offensive tear for Peterborough, but as a really high end fourth line center, or maybe even a third line center in the NHL, you know, good on faceoffs, will eventually be a penalty killer, is able to check, do all the things that Jake Evans does, except at a slightly higher level. So it's in Jake Evans' best interest to show a little bit more diversity in his game. I think that's what he's doing right now. So I don't know if he has a future with the Canadiens. His one more year on his contract, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have their cap-friendly page put to memory. I probably should at this point. But I think he had one, if not two. I'm going to check it real quick before I let you guys go, just because I don't want to put out wrong information. Yeah, he has one more year after this one on his contract at $1.7 million. So he has a clear runway to prove that he can be part of the future of this organization. I'm not quite sure he'll be able to. I think he has a future in the NHL for sure because he's shown himself to be an extremely useful player. But, you know, I don't know if that'll be in Montreal or not. I really like the guy. And I think he's just made tremendous strides. But by the time that contract expires, I believe he'll be 29. Might not fit the window of what the Canadiens are trying to do. So thanks for that, guys. I appreciate it. I think I got to actually most of the chat questions. And thanks for those who jumped on stage. I really appreciate it. And again, I think I said the last time I'm trying to do this every week. Now I'm just going to be more realistic and say I'm not probably not going to do it every single week, but I am going to try and do these more often. Enjoy talking to you guys, all of you, and enjoy your week. And I'll talk to you next time. Thank you.